You let me know when I'm rambling.
Wait a minute. Role reversal.
Yes.
Wouldn't it be weird if, like, I gave out with the life hacks and the, this is how you get along with people.
Yeah. Well, it's not April Fool's yet.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that would be fun, though.
Fair enough.
Oh, I also think it would be fun if, like, some, I'm just spitballing here, but, we should do randomly generated words, but the word is, like, from the crossword puzzle, or, like, you know, from the Wordle, or from the spelling
right.
bee, or whatever.
All right, so let's take today's Wordle.
Okay.
It would be ironic if I couldn't remember it after doing
yes.
variations.
Yes.
Today's Wordle, you're not going to do it, are you?
No.
Okay. Grade.
Grade?
Grade.
Okay. Episode 25, The Grade. In this episode, your hosts Steve and Moll hurtle from point A to point B while considering times that they, or others, have been weighed, measured, and found wanting. Or not. Strap in for The Ride to Redacted. Listeners, please be advised there are occasional cuss words in these episodes. So now you know. Okay, so grade.
Grade. Grade makes me think of, I mean, the improv mode.
Yeah.
I heard grade, thank you. That's yes. what you're supposed to do.
Yes.
And it's a good idea to repeat it, because otherwise it'll fly right out of your head, and then where are you? I've been telling people lately, have I told you this? I think I have. When I worked on Firestarter, what the assistant director said to me, David Worf, who at some point played Robin for some TV production.
What?
But he ended up being the assistant director. He was an AD by the time I
met him. Are you sure you're not thinking of Burt?
No, it wasn't Burt, the Robin we all know.
Yeah.
On that show. No, he played Robin on something else. I don't know. Whatever.
Okay.
Maybe it was Dinner Theater. I don't think so, though. Anyway, he ended up being the AD. And at one point, he pulled me aside, just him and me, and he said, "You're getting in too late, and you're leaving too early.
Yeah.
I want you to be the first one on the set and the last one to leave. I never wanted to hire you, but the producer did for some reason, so I guess I'm stuck with you." And oddly enough, he didn't add, "Have a nice day." So that was, yeah, I was like, okay, showbiz.
Yeah.
Right.
Were you rattled by this?
I mean, I still had some youth on me.
Sure.
In fact, I think I was 29.
Okay.
All right. You might not feel like that so young, but looking back, I mean, I just sort of took it, you know. I was like, what are you going to do? Like, okay, you know, like, duly noted. I don't think I said that. And then there was the time my father got fired from a job when he was 19. Just continuing that theme. He was a grocery store delivery boy. I don't know if he was yet a high school dropout. And the owner of the store said, "Look, I'm going to have to let you go, but I just want you to know, I don't think you're ever going to be good at anything you ever do." My dad told me that story when I got fired from Devlin Productions on Christmas Eve, which I had mixed feelings about because I kind of hated that place. So it was like weird. It was like,
but like,
okay.
You can't fire me, I quit kind of situation.
Well, no, it wasn't that, but it was like, you know, this isn't, I guess, you know, this isn't working out, Sandra Devlin says to me. And I'm like, yeah, okay, all right, fine. And so partly I'm thinking, on the one hand, I just got fired, which is a bummer. But on the other hand, I don't have to come back.
Yeah.
So, mixed feelings. But afterward, I was kind of shaken up.
Yeah.
So I called my dad and he told me that story, which I really appreciated.
I think when I got like a D on a quiz in sixth grade, and maybe in social studies, which was, you know, maybe the first time I had ever gotten a D in my life, I guess I brought it home to be signed or something, and mom told me that when you're born, they take a couple of vitals. Yeah, it's like
10 points. It's the 10-point thing.
Yeah, let me tell it.
Sorry. Yeah, okay.
It's like your lividity, your breathing, your heart rate, and like a couple of other things. But it's 5 things. You can score a 0, 1, or 2 on each one, 2 being the best. And so 10 is a perfect score. And so they take this test, like, you know, as soon as you're born and then maybe like 10 minutes later or whatever. And so when I was born, I scored a 1 out of 10 on this because I was like not breathing. You know, I was like, you know, eggplant purple and like just had like a very faint heartbeat. And so the midwives whisked me away, worked their magic. And by the time the doctor strolled into the room, they were like, yeah, that first test result didn't look too good, but they seem fine now. And mom told me this after I had gotten like a D on a quiz or whatever, and was like, that was the most important test of your life and you failed it. So everything else, who cares? I was like, great. I have a question for you.
Yes.
So we've talked a little bit about the road not taken. You had said if not an immigration lawyer, then perhaps in another life, an FBI investigator, fraud investigator. So I've asked people that question before of like, what's your like wildest dreams, unrealistic like backup career if your current thing were to not work out at any point or whatever? What in your fantasy would you run off and do? And I asked this once to, I think an adjunct art professor at my college, because she was auditing one of our classes, maybe a painting class or something. And she was like, well, I went to school to be an astronaut. I was like, what?
Oh my God.
And all of her paintings were like kind of space paintings, which was really awesome. So she was like, yeah, I went to school to be an astronaut, but then at a certain point of doing like a lot of math, I realized I didn't really want to go to space. She was like, the things that I really loved about space were like how it was depicted in movies and stuff, and so I realized it was really the artistic depictions that I really loved. And so I think she ended up going into film. She was like an adjunct film professor or something.
Cool.
Yeah.
That is a really cool story. So in a way, she's saying, like, this my dream. This is my dream.
Yeah.
Like, I was going to, like, sell out and become an astronaut.
Yeah.
Mail it in. Yeah. But, you know, the part of everything you just said that is the part that I remember as your second grade student.
Sure.
Or that jumped out at me is... So I did some math, and I realized I didn't want to be an astronaut.
Which, you know what?
It's like way more
being
math.
An astronaut is a shit ton of math.
Yeah, okay.
Not only is it that, it's also a lot of, like, being in the gym. You got to be in, like, really good shape.
Really good shape, and you got to be able to crunch them numbers.
Yes.
And if you're not into those things, listeners...
Yes.
Maybe, you know...
Maybe you should be in film.
We don't want to kill your dream of astronauticism. Astronauticality, but
astronauticality perhaps would be a technically correct conjugation because astro star and you know not
nautical.
Having to do with sea.
Right. I love that story. But also, earlier on, I was thinking, oh, we are sort of channeling the word grade, because you were talking about the your grade on the APGAR test, your first test, mm-hmm. then that D, I'm sorry to bring that up again.
Oh, I don't care.
You've gotten over it?
I've gotten over it.
Good. And the review I got from David Worf, a one-time Robin.
Yes.
I felt he was being harsh.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't swear that he was being unfair. I was like, I don't know. I mean, okay, fine. I don't know even if I had control over when I got to the set, but. Firestarter. So Firestarter, what, you know, the PA view of the original Firestarter. Speaking of, like, what do you remember from stuff?
Yeah.
Of course I remember, of course. After a run of night shooting, we come back in the van. I probably didn't drive it that time, but we're back at our beach house. And, you know, it's like the daylight is just breaking. And we, you know, being crew members and stuff, a couple of us in the house that I lived in with two other crew members, we went out to the beach, which was like right in front of our house, cracked open a couple of beers, sat on some beach chairs, and there were dolphins that were jumping. And it was like, okay, this is, you know, this isn't bad.
Suddenly in a beer commercial.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I remember that.
Was there anything, so we talk a lot about dreams.
Yeah.
Was there anything when you were younger that you were like, irrationally scared of?
Oh yeah, I'm sure there had to be. I just have to think of what it might have been.
Yeah,
the first thing I remember, which I may have mentioned.
Oh yeah.
That door.
Yes.
When I was left alone. I also remember crying out piteously in the house that I first remember living at on Chestnut Avenue in Teaneck, New Jersey. Four-family apartment house. I was in my bed. My parents are like some ways away in their bedroom. But I remember somehow the covers working themselves off me. And I was young enough that I couldn't contrive to put them back on. And I remember calling out, cover me! And eventually a parent, probably my mom, came and covered me. And I still remember that. But that's not what you're looking for. What are you looking for? Fears? You want some more solid...
Well, because we were talking of depictions of space.
Right.
When I was younger, I had an irrational fear of being disconnected from a spaceship and floating through space. Perhaps because I had seen 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Uh-huh, right, right.
That was terrifying to me. To just know that life support is gone and you're just on borrowed time until you die alone.
Apparently that scene in the movie made an impression on you.
Yes.
Oh, I remember a thing. Okay, but I don't want to cut you off.
No, that's it.
I was going to ask, what do you have? But you had that. Okay. So I also remember, probably not too long, my mother reminds me, maybe I was 5 or 7, not too long after the cover me. One thing I whimpered to her about was, I don't want to go in the army.
Uh-huh.
I think my mother was more amused by that than anything. I think she reassured me, you know, which was easy enough. Like, you know, you're not going to have to go into the army.
Was your dad ever in the army?
He was in the army.
He
was drafted. Korean War. He was promoted from, like, you know, private first class or whatever you are as a peon drafted.
A PA.
PA. Peon. to Sergeant at a certain point, because I guess he was like, for the first time in his life, was following orders or something. And so he got promoted to Sergeant. I don't know if this was before or after that, but at a certain point, it was like nighttime, and there was some commotion outside the barracks. And it might be that there was an enemy sort of lurking around. And like one of his fellow soldiers that was there was pretty nervous about it and said, you know, I mean, I think I'm going to go outside and like shoot them. And my father said, just calm down, forget about it, go back to sleep. Mm-hmm. So that was my father's war.
I mean, that reminds me of
Catch 22.
Saba. Well, Catch 22 also, but Saba. Dad.
The best war story ever.
Yeah, who was a medic in World War II, Kush?
Yeah.
But, you know, they sent him on patrol at night because he was a soldier, even though he was a medic. And he didn't really know, he vaguely knew which end of the gun shot bullets out of it. But he got spooked or something, and he accidentally fired off a round. And then he had to account for the shells because ammunition was fairly scarce, and they wanted to make sure that people were accounting for their shots and not just wasting ammunition. So he's scrabbling around in the dark after having almost shot himself in the foot, like, you know, trying to find a little tube of brass.
I have a slight correction.
Okay.
So the story as you've told it is unfortunately ever so slightly grander than the, I think, the facts as I remember being told them.
Okay.
So therefore, your version lacks a certain, what shall we say, mundane charm.
Uh-huh.
I don't think he was on patrol at all. As I recall hearing it, he was just in the barracks and for whatever reason, I don't know why, handling a gun and shot it off like randomly, and it, you know, kind of like pinged off the floor or the wall or something. And then, you know, the army being the army, they all were then tasked with having to account for the bullet, so they went made a search for it. So yeah, similar, but
we'll have to confer with Dragon Mom.
Yeah. Fact checking. But back to grading. I mean, you can have your grade, you know, what grade in school, and also what getting graded. What is, I know what it would be for my mother, but what would you say is, so far, your favorite moment of, like, positive feedback you've gotten from either one or more people? Like, moment or moments of triumph?
In my life?
Yeah. Even if there's nobody around. Just moments of, like, yes.
I think I'm probably blessed to have many such moments.
Ah, so it's tough to pick one.
Yeah, I interact with people a lot, and so I have a lot of great things to draw on.
So it's an example of kudos that you've gotten. I mean, obviously you get a certain amount of it on this podcast.
Sure.
Yeah, but non-podcast related kudos.
On my writing, sometimes I get things that are pretty great.
Nice. Such as?
Well, you know, I wrote that funeral fic, and I had a number of responses on it that were like, you made me cry. But then I had one response that was like, you know, I lost a grandparent in the last year, and you really captured that feeling of like going to a funeral and everybody else knows this person in a different, from a different circumstance than you do, and you really get the feeling of, like, did I even know this person? And so I felt affirmed by that in my writing ability. You're in the bike lane a little bit.
Yeah, because there's an ambulance, so you're supposed to pull over. Whether people know it or not, this is what we do.
Okay.
And then everybody was going to charge out and try to hit each other.
Emboldened by the presence of emergency responders, the native redacted residents are emboldened to try and damage each other with their two-ton automobiles.
Oh my God, that was so funny. Thank you for that narration. Okay, trouble breathing. Maybe we should call 911.
Unfortunately, there's been a car accident in your area, and all current first responders are otherwise occupied. Please stay on the line. Your call is important to us.
Please hold. Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
I think the word embolden is what made that work so well.
Yeah.
So, what does all of this have to do with being... So, and can you remember when you have graded someone else particularly highly? I mean, you've been... I don't mean to criticize you, which would be weird, but you've been complimenting me lately. Isn't it strange if I criticize you for that? Look, you're getting in too late, and you're complimenting too much. No, it's fine. I don't mind it. But it's like, whoa, what is going on? Do I deserve this? Almost definitely not. But other than me, is there anybody that you have given high marks to? Or is it everyone you meet?
You're like, am I a beacon of joy to everyone I come in contact with?
Yeah, that's basically what I'm asking.
Yes, next question.
Okay, fair enough.
So what are you actually asking me?
No, I mean, it's stupid because you are a beacon of joy and you're just like rotten with positivity. And we'll come back to the word positivity in a moment.
Yeah.
Just thematically appropriate. But I realize how stupid a question it is. Like, does anything stand out in your memory of a time when you particularly complimented someone? I don't know why I want the person to be a celebrity. Maybe not. Maybe forget about it. They're not a celebrity. Just anybody.
Okay. A time that I complimented somebody? Like, I'm sure there have been times.
Right. Yeah, there's so many.
Okay, you know what? So recently, I told Mom that I was really grateful to have you guys as my parents and to have her as my mom. I think that I am very lucky and fortunate to have the parents that I do, and to have been loved the way that I have been all my life and even to this very day. No matter
well,
what.
Back at you, first of all, that's lovely. Thank you. And it's easy when we have a kid like you, if I can call you a kid.
Sure.
Okay, kid. It probably would take away from the moment the way I love to do if I were to add that even if you were a much more horrible person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You would still
never
love
mind.
Me.
But I'm glad you're not.
Listen.
How wonderful is that?
It's good to know because some of my students, I really hope they're being loved at home because I don't know if I would have the patience to be with them for 2.5 hours and then for the rest of Sunday, let alone every day.
This person is a challenge.
Yeah, 2.5 hours, I can do that. And I sometimes walk away fuming. I don't know how they go home. and just live there. If they were just living in my house, I would be like, and now what?
I'm picturing you shaking hands with a parent of one of these kids and going, whoa, the way you do. Whoa.
Yes.
Whoa.
Well, you know what? So something in response to your question, something that I do, I have done several times, and that I make a point of doing now, is letting the parents of the kids who I know are challenging, but whom I've bonded with, know that they have a good kid. Because nice. I know they're not used to hearing that from their teachers. And maybe they don't hear your kid is fucking terrible, but if they kind of know their kid is fucking terrible, and also that, you know, they really struggle in school and that they need a lot more attention and maybe demand that attention at the top of their lungs often or something, you know, it's really good for them, for the parent, to hear, you know, your kid is not a bad kid, you know, even though it took me maybe longer to bond with this kid, or I had to intentionally tell myself I'm gonna love this kid by the end of the year or whatever.
If it kills me.
Well, you know, it's something I say to my boss, like, especially the spicy kids. Those are the ones that I'm really trying to connect with the most, because the easy kids, you know, they're easy.
Right.
But even the kids who are like quiet and attentive, sometimes they're like, you know, kind of needy or kind of don't get along with the other kids super well, or like, you know, they tend to ramble because they know the right answer or whatever. Those kids too, you know, I want to connect with the kids who need the connection from me the most.
So that brings me to my positivity question. So on the comment, listeners, check out the comments if you haven't done that, from listener Lior.
Yes.
A while ago, I well remember he wrote that we have a rule in our apartment, no British positivity, which I find very droll. But I had interpreted one way, and your mother interprets it another way. I thought what Lior meant was no being positive in the British way that blandly British people can be.
Uh-huh.
But your mother's theory, which I think is probably the correct one, is no, that's not what Lior meant. What Lior must have meant was no being positive about British people. That's it, isn't it?
I suspect that is, in fact,
yeah, I think
the
so.
Case.
Okay.
Sorry that this is British dumping, but Phoenix and I also, when we're watching something with British people and they're saying something fucked up, like their accent sounds fucked up when they say it.
Right.
We'll turn to each other and be like, why can't they fucking talk? Speak English. Like,
speak English.
We'll be like, why do you talk so bad?
Yeah.
And it's like, I would never say such a thing to somebody in person, but I'm also like, at one of my previous art store jobs, we had some British tourists who were asking how to hail a taxi, and I let them know that they were going to need either a very large taxi or two taxis because they had 8 people with them, and I was like, oh yeah, go out to this main road, you're not likely to, you know, hail one down here or whatever, and, after telling them this, they walked away. They were very, very nice, and I was nice and polite to them. But I just turned to my manager, who had been standing there, and shook my head and said, colonizers.
Well, that's fair. Look, if you're going to be an empire colonizer,
yes,
you got to take it.
And so I think we're ending our positivity segment with a little
British English dumping.
Yeah, just to balance it out.
Right. Yeah, good.
Just so nobody gets the wrong idea about this podcast.
You need the karmic balance.
Yes.
Let's face it.
Okay.
Cowabunga?
Cowabunga. Crisp handshake. Okay.
Get home safe.
I love you.
I love you too. And turn this sucker off.